Force on Force features the largest and strongest outdoor military organization in the country. These are the men and women who make it possible to enjoy the freedom to hunt and fish. It is with great pride that we bring you Force on Force podcast, coming to you from the Force on Force Talk.
Hey, welcome to the Force on Force Talk. We're having a lot of fun this year. It's been a great journey. I'm your host, Sean Dowple. We're here in the Force on Force Talk, the Tactical Operations Center. All our shows start in the Tactical Operations Center, and all military operations start in the Tactical Operations Center. This week, I got an exciting guest who knows a lot about TOC operations, Jake Whiteside from Chiefs Custom Calls. He's been quite a few, like me, over his military career, been a lot of TOCs downrange. So we know a lot about the TOC, but this is kind of fun, cool opportunity that we have to sit and talk some stuff that we want to kind of discuss. But before we get into it, a lot of things going on with us here at RE Bass Landers, Buck Hunters, Duck Hunters, Hog Hunters, and Redfish. This week is season 13 premiere of Army Bass Anglers Force on Force, which has really been a bread and butter, which started this whole thing, and we're pretty excited on the Sportsman's Channel. So it's going to air at 10:30 on Wednesday morning Eastern Time, and then if you miss it, you can catch it at 11 a.m. on Saturday. So a lot of fun. Really looking excited for this one. It's going to be really cool. We talked a little bit at the Classic about what this season's kind of entails, going outside the state of Texas for the first time to Florida, and some of the cool stories are going to come out of the military moments for that season. So a lot of that going on. Really close to announcing a new sponsor next week. Hopefully we'll have all the stuff done on that on the hunting side. So we're super excited about that. We kind of teased a little bit about that coming out of ATA show. So just finalizing detail on that. So it's been a good week, busy, but everybody knows it's springtime and a lot of bass fishing going on, spring spawning going on around the country. And that's, you know, normally what a lot of people talk about, but there's also a big part of the country that gets excited about this time of year because it's turkey season. I'm trying to get everything done this week so I can head up maybe Thursday and Friday and head down to Alabama and chase some turkeys around before the season opens up a week or two later here in Kentucky. And that's why I thought it'd be great to bring on Jake Whiteside. So, Jake, how you doing?
Man, I'm great, and I'm really excited to be on the show, so thanks for having me.
Man, it's a lot of fun. So a little bit about Jake. Jake makes our calls, whether it's our turkey calls or duck calls. I think one of his most underrated calls he makes is his grunt calls. I mean, I talk to him all the time. I mean, I've had a lot of success with him on the deer side, but he does it such great. I know he has a passion for turkey hunting, but more than that, I think one of the cool stories I tell about Jake when people come by the booth asking about, hey, who makes your calls? I'm like, well, it's Jake Whiteside. He's a Black Hawk pilot, and I said he's a full bird colonel. And just my visualization to kind of explain, he's not like your most guys that we think about. You know, always got this analytical, you know, he and I've been around the Army guy sitting at night reading Clausewitz on War documentary, 600-page book. No, Jake's in the basement turning calls or learning how to be a better call maker, doing those kind of things. And I think that's what kind of makes it special. And I think that's what's really cool about the military. Anyways, you meet everybody from different skill sets to all walks of life. And so that's kind of when I visualize Jake down there at night turning calls, and I tell that story to a lot of people that come by the booth. So glad to have you, and I know you and I have come from a lot of the same parts of the country, and I know it's a passion of yours. So, you know, kind of take us through, you know, how it is that you got into to the Chiefs Custom Calls and where your passion's at and how that kind of started.
Yeah, well, so you hit the nail on the head. You're right. You know, when I'm off work and I'm not doing what I need to do as a husband or a father, which they keep me pretty busy, I'm in the shop and I'm trying to turn calls, and it's an incredible release for me. So joined the Army over 20 years ago, and I started out as a Kiowa pilot. Just as a point of clarity for anyone who's wondering, like, I'm a Kiowa pilot in remission turned Black Hawk pilot. So I've been both a meat eater and a plant eater. And I say that jokingly for all the aviators out there. But, you know, after 20 years, Sean, and you and I talked about this when we were together in Texas, this life can be incredibly stressful. And it's not just relative to the military, though we have a unique level of stress that we experience. And you and I probably, we processed that hunting at first or fishing at first or whatever it was that kind of got you back to center. And, I'm gonna be honest with you, man. The guys that just read Clausewitz, as you said, they always seemed really boring to me. Like, I'm not saying that there's not room for them, and it's incredibly important to just be an absolute master of your craft. But I think you got to diversify enough to kind of get back to who you are and have something that is an expression of something else. And it allows you to just kind of flush a little bit of the drama, whatever that drama is in your life, and kind of get back to center. And then you can go back out. And I think people benefit from you being your best you. So having said all that, I started making calls really because I was a hunter and I was taking people hunting. I was taking my XO hunting when I was a battalion commander and my three, and heck, I would take my kid hunting. And I spent so much time in the woods, much like yourself, that you look at your kit and you go, man, this call is ugly. Like, why have I been toting this around for so many years? I could do better than this. Well, that's incredibly arrogant, because the first call I made was 10 times worse than the one that I wanted to improve upon. But like everything we've done in the military, if you're an aviator, if you're an infantryman, if you're a signal officer, if you're an intelligence, you do it wrong one time and you're like, oh, no, that's not how it's going to be. And you just become obsessed, just like you were and winning multiple championships as a bass fisherman. I became obsessed with, I want to make the very best call that I can, because I want on your slowest day in the blind or your slowest day in the turkey woods, on the slowest day, to look down and at least have a good call to look at and be like, man, that is exactly what I wanted, made exactly the way I wanted it. And I'll pass this down to my son or daughter or grandkids. So that's how I got into it. And it's just become a passion of mine. Of course, started with turkey and then went duck. And of course, deer. And I'm with you. I like my grunt call. I think it's subtle and unique, but at the same time, like, people ask me all the time, like, what's your favorite thing to make? And I'm probably like you, Sean. The moment fishing season's over, my favorite thing to do is deer season. And the moment deer season's over, my favorite thing to do is, well, duck season or turkey season. So the moment I'm done with duck season, the only time you see me making duck calls is because somebody wants a duck call. But then I'm focused on turkey too, and I'm kind of getting ready for the incoming season. So, yeah, I really love it. I think that was my encouragement to others. When I was in command, when I was out of command, when I was in the war college, which I'll add that Audible, you know, you could listen to the Bluetooth head. I listened to multiple books on tape while turning calls just to try to digest the information. But in the war college, telling friends, you know, this story that I'm telling you and encouraging them, like, look, dude, if you get recharged in the outdoors, let me help be a part of that. You ain't got to buy a call from me. I want to take you hunting. But if you don't get recharged by that, if you get recharged by playing chess or, you know, God forbid, reading Clausewitz, then you got to do that. You got to do something, because I kind of look at call making and the outdoors or whatever it is. I look at what you and I do, Sean, is it's almost like social ministry, man. You're helping people, you know, kind of get back to home base. So, that little wordy, but it's my passion. You know that I love it. So,
yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. Just for the listeners out there, when Jake and I refer to Clausewitz, just to give you guys kind of frame of reference, it's a 600-page book that when you go to Command and General Staff College, they introduce you to. And if you've never watched the movie Crimson Tide, that's when Gene Hackman refers to Denzel Washington. He refers to him as young Clausewitz, which is the German military strategist who studied Napoleon. And so you read this book, and so it's always a big joke with me about it, having that frame of reference. But, you know, you got to find something. I was the same way. Find something to do outside of what you do. The funniest story I ever had was not for me personally, but when the G3 of the 101st Airborne Division, he was a big hunter, fisherman, duck hunter, and he was in battalion command. He had a lieutenant mess up a raid, and he asked him, he said, son, what do you do for fun? You know, and he said, I like to run and work out. And he said, no, that's what we do for our job. He's like, what do you do for fun? He said, yeah. And I know this is true, because I asked a couple of people that were his XO and everything. He goes, yeah, this conversation really happened. He said, I like to fish and hunt. He said, for one, if you fished and hunt, you'd be able to practice your craft in the off time. And you'd be more relaxed when you're out there doing it. And, you know, I think there's a lot to that, what we do. I got asked a long time ago, and I was a company commander, that my guys used to ask me, they were like, hey, sir, how did you learn how to do this? And I'd be like, to me, it's just like rabbit hunt with my grandpa. And that's I've taken a lot from that to being a military officer and vice versa. And then being in the outdoors is such a great way to stay balanced in what you do. And I think, you know, your calls are pretty awesome. They're really cool. I know I love selling them, and I love the grunt calls. I ain't gonna lie to the listeners. I can't use a duck call to save my life. That's one of those things that I'm going to try to work on this year, learn how to call a duck. Jake actually has a really good tutorial on our Force on Force TV website on how to call that duck out there. And so, but like, we actually have a deer that we're going to show that I killed one of my target bucks this year on a TV show, that if it wasn't for Jake's calls, that we had him coming on a string in the middle of the rut in Alabama. And so what I really like is, unlike I said a little bit ago, but your grunt calls, is because it's a lot more subtle, a lot more natural to what I'm used to hearing white-tailed deer in the woods. And I think that's what really makes a difference. And I actually have two of them, because they're custom. They have a different tone to them. And so it sounds like two different deer in the woods. And so I think that's really cool. But I know your passion is really turkey hunting, and I know that's where you got your start. And so we're getting ready. Turkey season's kicking off. Got any, you know, how does that, you know, play into from a turkey side of the house?
So you and I were talking, and the family is getting ready to move. We're moving down to Alabama. We live in Northern Virginia right now. And here's a funny story. So wife got up for work. My wife's a personal trainer. Most people are trying to, you know, get in shape early hours of the morning or late in the evening. And so my wife gets up at probably 4:15 to be at the gym at 5 to train folks. And she gets up at 4:15 and I'm already downstairs. And she's like, "You working on like packing?" I was like, "No, turkey season's in a week. And I got this new rib mount sight for my 410. And I knew that I had to get up early and get it done so that I could get all the other things done for the move. And I could get my workout in. I had to get up. So I'm up in the wee hours of the morning trying to mount that. I got a 410 over and under that I had Cerakoted, and then I had it dipped. So it's a beautiful camouflage dip. It's got Chief Custom Calls on the side of it, a bronze Cerakote. And so I got this nice laser point sight on it. So I was mounting that this morning in anticipation for turkey season. Some folks have already gotten started. I know South Carolina is already in the game. I know that Florida, Georgia, Alabama is in. I think they came in last week. So, you know, as far as what I'm looking forward to, my plan right now is I got to go down to Alabama for a school. And then when I get back here, I'm going to take a few days of leave, and I'm going to hit South Carolina and North Carolina in succession. South Carolina will be kind of getting a little bit close to the end of the season, but North Carolina will just be opening up. South Carolina, North Carolina. And then if I can squeeze it in, I'm going to try a couple of birds on public land in Virginia. I'm going to try. Like, I can't guarantee any of that, but you know, number one rule is if you can put them to bed, you know, you got a shot at their head the next day. So, you know, if you can, roost one. But if you're like me and you're a weekend warrior and you don't always have the luxury, you don't have the land and you got to get it, you know, get in there early. Like deer, sometimes you tell yourself rational lies. Yeah. And well, it's light enough where I can see some movement. So, you know, and you just convince yourself, no, I'm not late. Well, if the sun's already up, you're late when it comes to turkey hunting. You need to be in there in the dark. And it's a great example, security/listening halt for all those who ever did a patrol in their life. You better get in the woods. You better stop, look, listen, smell, do your still, sit down, get situated, get quiet. If you know where you need to be, otherwise, just kind of wait for that first owl to talk. You know, I've made locator calls over the years, and they've worked to great success, but you know, if you're in a bind, sometimes Mother Nature will throw you a bone, and an owl will hoot, or a bird will start talking, or the turkeys will get worked up on their own. So it's important just to kind of listen. And for all the artillerymen, or every last one of us, really, make sure you got your hearing aids on so you can locate things. And I'll tell you the other thing. There's a lot of calls that you can get right or wrong, but it's true of all calls. So you talk about you can't blow a duck call. And first of all, I don't think you should judge yourself like that, because I'm a good old fashioned Southern Baptist boy myself. But every one of us probably heard this at one point or another. I'll just make a joyful noise. You know, like you can't sing. If you are duck hunting and you can muster a decent quack,
right,
a quack, And similarly, if you're turkey hunting and you can get a decent yelp or just a subtle cluck, it don't take much to get a tom worked up. He's in the mood. He's wanting to find her anyway. He's wanting her to find him. So if you can get him to talk to you, your next best call is to shut up. Same thing with anything else, right? So like, I tell people all the time, like, you should have a call. It's like any other tool. And yeah, you may not be perfect at it, but you know, not everybody's a sniper, but you should be able to shoot a deer with a rifle or call a duck with a basic quack, and same thing with a turkey. So anyway, my food for thought is be early. To be early is to be on time, and then just be subtle with it. And I think you'll have a lot more success than if you know, running gunning is higher risk, much more opportunity for error.
So I tell the listeners, my nemesis is turkeys. That's been, you know, I've been close the last couple of years, and I've had some great, you know, opportunities calling them in. And then, you would think is that part about shut up and listen. Sometimes I don't follow that quite as well as I should. I mean, my favorite one is, I had one come all the way down on, got within 20 yards of me, never knew he was even there. And I'm like, there ain't nothing here. And I stood up, and that sucker stood up, and I took off, and I was like, I can't even believe it, man. So there's a lot of truth to that. So that's why. And then last year we had so much. It was a bad year with the wind that we had, and a lot of wind storms, and lost a lot of trees on my property here in Kentucky, which I think hindered a lot of the roosting areas that they had. And so, you know, I think it's going to be a lot better this year. So I'm looking forward to it. But we had a property down in Alabama. We've had a lot of turkeys on the Wise Eye Trail cameras down there this year. And so it's going to be pretty cool that down there, because we've done a lot of coyote management to kind of help the turkey population. So I'm excited to get down there and to get going, because I think when I say the duck calls, it's one of those things where I hadn't kind of put time and effort into it, like with a turkey call. Like, I didn't know how to do it either. And it's like you said, I just took a little bit of time to put some effort into it to figure it out, and even figured, you know, I could even, you know, put a mouth call in on a turkey and do it now. But you just saw about what you take your time to do with. And it's one of those things that hasn't been a priority to me. And I'm eventually going to get there and do that and go for it. Cause I think it's a lot of fun, man. Just spending so much time in outdoors and from one season to the next season, you know, there's just so many things you can do. Like, we just got through filming a new Hog Hunters TV show, which, I mean, it's going to be pretty intense. When you see it, Jake, you'll be like, man, that reminds me so much of what I seen downrange. I mean, it's just off the charts. We've got thermal drone coverage. You and I have talked a little bit about this. Like, we even had to deal with weather, and, you know, being an aviation guy, that weather can be like always has a vote and everything that goes on downrange. And so, you know, so when we're, you know, I think that's what's cool, like with what we do with so many different our brands, that we're either fishing or we're hunting something out there, you know. And I think that's that release that you're kind of talking about. And I'm excited for this turkey season, because I've really kind of decided that that's what I'm going to kind of focus on this spring. You know, we filmed our fishing show early and got all our expos kind of out of the way. So I got kind of my April and first part of May kind of opened up to go after chasing gobblers. And I'm excited about that. So that's really, really been it's not like I hadn't seen, I have plenty of turkeys running around me during deer season. It's like they taunt me. They know.
You know, come springtime, it's obviously a different ball game. It's, you know, it's, I mean, I can, for comparison's sake, it could be a little bit different, but it's the rut. And so they're wanting to mate. They're wanting to, you know, they're wanting to get together. They're not as fired up, though. I've certainly heard toms gobble when I was stationed in Kansas. I remember open day of a rifle season. I was set up in a bottom on the range at Fort Riley, and I heard a gun go off, and two toms gobbled next to me. Shot gobbled. They, you know, they didn't know. Yeah. It was just like thunder will get a tom gobbling. But yeah, I think it's incredibly exciting, especially if you know, you're just wanting to finally close the deal. My youngest son, bless his heart, he's been hunting with me a long time, and I don't think anybody's had as many cool experiences with a turkey as he's had. He's never pulled the trigger. And one of the greatest hunts of my life, Sean, was with this kid who, like, my son and I go out and we scout this place. We're looking through binoculars. We're looking on this field. This is in Kansas. And there was at least four strutting toms and just a metric buttload of hens all over this field. And we watched them. The sun went down. We're just quietly watching them from the front of the truck. Like, it's enough to where you can see underneath the trees and it kind of float down. You can see this green patch and you can just see them. And we watched them fly up, man. Toms were gobbling. And for those who are not as familiar, in the evenings, the tom will fly up typically first. Hens will be shortly there to follow, but he'll start gobbling. If he's gobbling his brains out in the evening, like as it's starting to get dark, he's on the limb and he's calling the ladies to roost. He's like making sure that his females are with him. It doesn't always work that way. They're not all sitting on the same limb, but they're in the same group of trees or whatever. And then as they wake up in the morning, if you've had the opportunity to roost them, you don't want to like sit up right underneath them with a headlamp in the dark. Don't do that. But okay, they were in this field yesterday. They generally want to strut in this place. Why do they want to strut? They want to show off their feathers. If it's been raining or it's damp or it's cool, they want to sun and warm up. They may want to dust, and they're all going to eat. And while they're eating, they're going to put on a show for the ladies because it's an opportunity to mate. So if you can get to a place where you're, okay, I know they flew up there, or I know the hens tend to congregate here, or I know that I see strutters here in the morning or in the afternoons, then set up in a way that you think you can get there without being too obtrusive on their bedroom. And then a couple rules of thumb. If the hens are talking a lot on the roost and the toms start gobbling and you can see all that happening, watch the show for a second. But as the hens will start to do a fly down cackle, there's a couple things you can do. You can start going berserk on your call because you want to get that hen thinking that she's got other hens that she's competing with. If you're camouflaged enough to where you can hear that tom, but you can't see him, you can, with your hat, I don't know if you can hear that over the phone, but you can flap down if you don't have a turkey wing and you can.
Sounds just like a turkey coming down.
Yeah. And you can do that. Just anything to try to convince whoever's out in that field or where you saw them roost, hey, there's some legitimate lady activity going on over here.
Right, right.
Now, here's the other thing that you got to know is bucks chase does in the deer world. Hens come to toms. And the reason the tom gets fired up and the reason he comes chasing, and a lot of times you see him beat up on a decoy or whatever, is he's worked up because she disobeyed the natural order. In his world, I gobble. I'm the one that's showing. You're supposed to come to me. And so in an ideal situation, you're the only hen he's really looking for. And he comes looking for you, and he's searching, and you head him off the path. In the worst-case scenario, he runs into a real live hen between your call and his gobble. And then you really, Sean, and we've all been there, you got to play a risk game of you got to get super aggressive. And you got to convince that hen that now she's got competition. And they'll, like, he's dumb, yeah. Dude. Now he's ticked off. You've got to convince him he's competing, and so is she. So I've been exactly where you are, but, dude, my son – We went to this field. We watched all these things go up. We get down in this little thicket. We knew where all these birds were. And sure as heck, sun comes up. They're gobbling. Hens are going crazy. We start calling. Everybody's flying down. I'm matching the hens. They're calling. The toms are coming. And the next thing you know, I don't know if you've ever heard a drum, but behind us, a tom came over. And I don't know how to – I can't mimic a drum. I was like – and they just – they are drumming that diaphragm in their body.
You see their chest almost vibrating when they do it.
Yeah. And this tom was behind me and I'm frozen. It's youth season. I don't even have a gun. My son's got his gun. He pointed out at this field. I'm not exaggerating. And so he's pointing out this field and people can't see me, but he's got like a fork of a tree, like in between, like two little saplings. But like, I don't know why he did that. But in the morning he set his gun up right between his fork. And he was dead on accurate at those two toms that were way out in the field. But this tom walked by us. I swear to you, man, he could have stepped on my toes. And I was like, swing the gun. And he couldn't swing the gun. I looked over. I was like, oh, no, he can't. But he got to, I mean, this thing was shaking our chest, drumming. And he goes out in the field and they get to fighting. Unfortunately, they're fighting out of range. But he got to see that at the age of like 11 years old. And he's had multiple experiences where he's seen all sorts of great performance. So I say that they don't get disheartened. Sometimes you go a long time, but still there's hunters that'll hunt their whole life without having a turkey. I'm literally drumming, walking on top of him because he's so focused on those other toms. So anyway, I get long winded, man. Turkey hunting is my passion. It's where I started. And I joke all the time. I prefer to always be able to hunt what I want, but if I couldn't hunt anything else, I would hunt turkey. If you're like, Jake, you only get to hunt one thing the rest of your life, I'd hunt turkey. It's the most interactive. It's the most challenging, in my opinion, and the most rewarding.
I think put it for people that don't hunt turkey, I think the best way to put it is it's like the rut for whitetail on steroids, because, you know, that's what I kind of equate it to, because, you know, you can hunt whitetail all season long, but it's nothing like that time during the rut when those bucks are chasing the does, and you can rattle a buck in. I mean, when you're out there, the times that I've had those encounters, you know, I've had a couple of awesome, kind of what you described, encounters with some turkeys, and it's been really, really cool during turkey season just to be in that encounter situation, because your heart rate gets to going. And I think it's that adrenaline rush, that just that encounter that kind of drives you to come back, because it's so up close and personal with those turkey that are out there. And that's why I see why so many people get addicted to it in the springtime. I know I got friends that'll tell me, they'll tell you, let me go with you. They like, I just love to call them. I just want to go call them and watch you shoot, because they just enjoy that part of it that much.
There's an incredibly rewarding aspect of it. And don't get me wrong, shooting a bird is challenging in and of itself. You can ask any turkey hunter, and if they've done it long enough, they've missed, and it doesn't even make sense. But calling one in, convincing the tom that, like, you're what he's looking for, and knowing when to kind of get heavy on the call, and then, frankly, knowing when to put that daggum call down, that's really the art of it. You got to seal the deal, and again, we've all missed, but to get him within range to even take the shot, I think that's why you got friends who are like, man, I just want to call. I just want to prove to myself that I can bring them in. And it's so much fun to do it. And that's why I love guiding turkey. And I've taken a lot of folks and gotten them their first bird. I've also taken a lot of folks and we've made a lot of mistakes. So I can tell you, volume one, the early years, I had to screw up a turkey hunt. I've done it. But it's so much fun. I went bow hunting for elk years ago, killed a nice bull elk. And I tell people all the time, elk hunting ain't nothing but, you know, 800-pound turkey. They just respond. Whitetail deer, you and I both know, they're a wary creature, and rightfully so. They got plenty of things that are out to get them in this world, but they're not a very vocal creature. Like, you, if at the right time, you know when to rattle. You know, okay, there's a dominant buck in here. I know he's keyed up. I know that if I rattle, he's going to be the dude that's challenged and thinks the other guys are fighting for either property or ladies. Okay, I'll do it. Or it's just that right time. Maybe you hear a snort, wheeze, or a grunt, and you kind of reciprocate, or you see some chasing, and you're just trying to get on the action. But otherwise, whitetail deer are really quiet.
Yeah.
But elk and turkey, they're such vocal creatures, and so it's so interactive. And that's what I love about it, is because you are not only trying to find your prey, but you're playing a game of, you're trying to fool them into, like, oh, that's who I want to talk to. And you can do it wrong, you know, and I can remember the first time I ever went turkey hunting. A good friend of mine handed me a pot call. This has been 20 years ago. Good friend of mine handed me a pot call. And I started to work on this thing, and he looked at me through his face mask, and he made some eye contact and shook his head, took it from me. but that was my clue to be like, hey, man, this is just, you don't just go out here and freaking destroy this call. You got to know something, but that's the practice, you know,
it's all about practice, trying to get it right. And I say it any time I go hunting or go fishing, I'm always learning something. I'm always trying to figure something different, because everybody asks us, like, it's whether it's hunting or fishing, it's never the actual catching your fish or taking of the animal. It's the chase of the process. It's the process that you go through. It's the unlocking the puzzle, all those pieces that you put together. And when you finally put that puzzle together, it that's what kind of intrigues you, and that's what makes you, you know, that what you originally started when we talked about this was that well-balanced, brings you back kind of center, relieves that stress that you kind of, you know, look for in life, is that that whole sense of everything that you've kind of figured out, that, you know, it's a puzzle is the best way to describe it. It's a puzzle, and you put it all together, and sometimes you don't, and some, you know, and then you learn, like, man, I did this and I shouldn't have done that, or I didn't do this and I should do this. But you take that and you put it, you file it away for the next time you go about, and you're like, oh, I was in that situation before, so don't do this and don't do that, you know. So you learn from each and every single one of those deals to kind of help it go forward and make it a better hunt or fishing experience the next time.
Yeah, I mean, turkey's got some comparison to bass fishing. I am not the bass fisherman you are. I don't think that I ever will be. I do my best fishing on a pond that I know's got bass in it, you know, on a farm or something, not where you guys are really trying to find the fish, dial in on it before you start catching things. But I'll tell you, the same way that you've got like a whole bag of tricks.
Yeah.
And I've gone fishing with a couple of the folks from your team, and I was wowed by how many rods they had in their boat and how many setups they had. And they were the speed and the rate at which they were presenting different things. And that's not a direct translation, but for turkey, as an example, there'd be times that you're like, man, you're not saying anything for this plate. And then I'll pull out like a copper call or a titanium call or a slate call, glass call, crystal, you name it. Like we all kind of get to where we have a few things in heavy rotation, but it's like, if they ain't biting the Carolina rig, then, you know, I'll go to a crankbait or I'll go to a rattle trap or whatever. And it's the same thing with turkey. And that's what's fun. Like you said, knowing what tool I got to use and knowing, like, okay, circumstances, environment, situations different, I can adapt. And that's incredibly rewarding too. And you learn a lot. You learn, oh, wait a minute, that's too loud. And that spooks them.
And different parts of the country, you have to do different things. But that's the other key piece. I think I take for granted, I don't know about you, but I kind of take for granted, being in the military has allowed me to go to a lot of different places to fish and hunt, to be exposed to a lot of different environments for fishing and hunting. And what you realize doing that, not turkey, deer, bass, you name it, they don't all respond the exact same way and is that in different parts of the country. Now, they all have some of the same tendencies, but you learn that, you know, a fish in Highland Reservoir in North Carolina relates to structure differently than the Tennessee, all these things that you kind of learn. And so that's what I think is really cool, that I think from our perspective of being in the military for as long as we get, and getting, you get the part of being away is having to move all the time. That's never a fun part, but the part that I do take away from that is all the experience that I've got to experience in different environments to hunt and fish in. And I haven't kind of told that story enough in from a personal perspective, because I always say this, I look at people, they grow up and they hunt the same places, they fish the same places, and they don't know any different, where you and I have had to adapt in so many different types of environments across the country. And it really makes you a better outdoorsman along the way.
Yeah, I've killed nice deer in Kansas. My biggest deer ever is in Missouri, all because of military travel. And in Georgia, but probably the proudest I am of any deer was, just like you said, I got transplanted. I taught briefly at the United States Military Academy. And while I was there, you know, I was transplanted to New York, and I was like, man, I want to get a nice deer with my bow. And we were doing summer training, and I saw this buck, and he was frankly a cull for any other environment. He's a big, and I know what people are thinking, like, cull, he's a basket six. No, man, this dude's a huge six. I could send you this picture and you're like, good Lord, like, it's fork horns.
Yeah.
Enormous. And it carried mass all the way through, but he was never going to be anything but a six pointer. I saw him, and this guy that was next to me, you know, who lived in New York and worked on the range there, was like, oh man, I've been seeing that deer for years. He's so ugly. I'm like, that deer walks out in front of me during bow season, I'm gonna smack him. Because to me, I was like, if that deer is that old, if this guy's been seeing him for years, and he was clearly old, in velvet, he looked good, but he's just big old fork horns and tall brow tines. And that was it. Kind of funky looking. But anyway, I killed that deer. And it's one of the proudest things, because it was like, I'm a transplant. New York is totally different than hunting the bottoms in Georgia.
Yeah.
Certainly different than hunting plains and some of these fingers and bottoms in Kansas. Not the same agriculture, not the same geography at all. So anyway, super proud to have done that in New York. And like you said, it exposes you to so much. That's one of the great things about the military, is you get to meet the mom and pop places. Like, one of my favorite things to do after hunting any new place is to figure out where the greasy spoon is. And I ain't talking about Waffle House. Figure out where the old timers are sitting around, drink up coffee, and they'll look at you side eyed a couple times, you know, but you just keep showing up, man, and ask them questions. And I've met some really cool people. It's not 100%, but occasionally over 20 years, you meet those dudes, and the next thing you know, they ask you to come hunting with them. It doesn't happen all the time, and I certainly wouldn't go in it with that motivation. But Sean, that whole experience, I'm grateful for the military. People talk about, oh, my military experience is so frustrating. Yeah, life's frustrating. But there's been some cool rewards with all the travel we've done and the people we've gotten to meet. And like you said, I've gotten to travel and hunt in a lot of places I would have never seen had it not been for the military. So, yeah, I agree with you on that.
And that's one of the coolest things. We kind of wrap that up. I think I love the ability to tell those stories that we've been around the country and to hunt and fish some of the places that I never would have traveled to do that. I think that's pretty cool. And I think, you know, it's one of those stories that I think as we tell more and we expose more of the people in the military to give them an opportunity to share our love for the outdoors, I think we're doing them ability to get out there and find that balance. But not just, maybe it's not just from a from a fishing hunting perspective, but to tell them that find something that you enjoy to do that gives you that balance in your life. Cause I think that's important that we kind of talk about. I know this has been a lot of fun talking to you today. I know we could probably talk a whole hour and a half. I knew this one could be easy with you and I, because we could have a conversation, and you're one of the easy ones that we have such a passion for what we do, and it's easy to kind of get out there, you know, so it's been a good deal. We have a lot of stuff coming up this week for us. We're going to be at Lake Fork at the Mega Bass event. And so we'll have our booth there, and that's going to be a lot of fun. And this month starts April. And so one of the cool things in the month of April, and one of the cool things for the podcast, that I want to talk things outside of fishing and hunting, and kind of hit on a little bit with Jake and I today, is things that from my career, other people's career, and how we've kind of shaped it from an outdoors perspective. But the month of April is the month of the military child. So one thing that I kind of want to do this month is later on in the month is I'm bringing on my boys who are big outdoorsmen to kind of talk from that perspective of being a dependent of the military and how that kind of falls into it. And I think that would be kind of neat for the listeners to go forward and kind of talk that. And so we're going to do that show this month. And then we're going to have some of our sponsors on this month to kind of talk about some of the cool things that go on. So once again, I appreciate it, Jake. And I appreciate what you guys are doing. So you guys know, because I talked about my boys, Jake is actually going to make a call for me to give to the high school football team where my son plays football, that I'm getting him to do up, that we're going to actually auction off for the high school football team there. And it's going to be a pretty awesome deal that we do with Jake, and that I love what we do with Army Bass Anglers. We had some that we did at Toby, the Texas Old Men's Bass Invitational. We got some that we're going to do at Patriot Sporting Challenge. But I say this because Jake has some ties to Clarksville, Tennessee, the home of the 101st Airborne Division. And that in the fall, they do an event where I wanted to do something with my boys in conjunction. And so I thought, what better way? We got a lot of that close to Real Foot, and a lot of people on Kentucky Lake that duck hunt. So Jake is working a real custom call for that. So it'll be really cool to have that opportunity to showcase some of his work around the Fort Campbell 101st Airborne Division area. And we just really look forward to it. So I appreciate again, Jake, once again, having you on. And if you guys want to know more about what we do at Army Bass, Buck, Hog, or Duck, go to ForceOnForceTV.com and make sure you watch the season 13 premiere of Army Bass Anglers Force on Force. See you next week. Cool.
Thanks for listening to the Force on Force podcast. Join us next time as we dive into more topics from the Force on Force talk. For more information or to learn how to join the organization, visit our website at ForceOnForceTV.com.